Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 537, titled The Project, The Muslim Brotherhood and Proxy War Around the World. This is being recorded on December 4th of the year 2005. Once again, let me remind listeners to utilize the Spitfire website at www.spitfireliz.com and the many linked websites with a wealth of information available that will supplement not only this broadcast, but others. Indeed, increasingly, I think the use of the internet available subject material is essential for a complete understanding of these programs. For example, when I talk about the Muslim Brotherhood and the German/Nazi concept of the Earth Island, a book that's up on the Spitfire website, Cairo to Damascus, will present a very, very good overview of this. And in terms of some of the Third Reich economic plans for world conquest, a number of books, including Treason's Peace, All Honorable Men, and Germany's Master Plan. We'll go into that. But in particular, for the background, on the subject material of this program, the book Cairo to Damascus by the noted anti-fascist writer John Roy Carlson will provide very, very good background information for the present discussion. Now, inside one of the program, we took a look at a document called The Project. This is a Muslim Brotherhood blueprint for the infiltration of Western society and its eventual subjugation to an Islamo-fascist order. Again, note that the Muslim Brotherhood is not only a theocratic totalitarian organization, but one with fascist dogma and a fascist history. Now, in terms of understanding the use of not only Arabs, but Muslims as proxy warriors by Germany and the Third Reich, we're going to take a look at an earlier pre-Nazi manifestation of the same doctrine. Now, central to this is the geopolitical concept of the Earth Island. When the Germans, and other geopoliticians as well, when they looked at the world, when they looked at a map of the world, they noticed that Europe, both Western and Eastern, from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, the former Soviet Union, most of the Middle East, India, Pakistan, and China. And, of course, India and Pakistan at that point were still part of the same British colony of India. That was one landmass, and that one giant landmass contained not only most of the world's land resources, most of the world's mineral resources, most of the world's population, and most of the world's oil. And right across the middle of it, controlling that landmass and the world's oil supply, consequently, is a vast stretch of Muslim population. And the German geopoliticians and later the geopoliticians of other countries saw alliance with that Muslim population as a key to international supremacy. Because basically, without allying with and either controlling or remaining as, quote, equal, unquote, allies with that group, it was impossible to gain world domination. What we're going to look at now is how the German imperialists during World War I allied with the Ottoman Empire and basically sought to use the Ottoman Empire, which occupied that part of the world at this point in time, as an ally in order to basically oust the British and the French and the Russians as colonial masters of the world. In so doing, in allying with the Ottoman Empire and, quote, Muslims, unquote, the Germans sought to gain control not only of that landmass but of the world's petroleum supplies. Note that this particular gambit went so far as to have Kaiser Wilhelm II, proclaim sympathies with the Muslim peoples of the world during a state visit to Constantinople, at that point the capital of the Ottoman Empire. For this look at a German geopolitical alliance with the Muslim peoples of the Earth Island in an earlier historical period, something that can provide us with something of a template through which we can understand the Nazi Muslim Brotherhood alliance and, in turn, the underground Reich's alliance with the Muslim Brotherhood in its, quote, project, unquote, period, we're going to turn to the book American Dynasty, subtitled Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. This book was copyrighted 2004 by Kevin Phillips and was published by Viking Press. And in a section called World Wars, the Middle East, and Oil, we read as follows. Few Americans have realized the extent to which both world wars dripped petroleum concern. Save for the bloody 1942-45 island hopping in the Pacific, we usually picture both world wars in European terms. Peripheries like North Africa were just that, sideshows. Ship convoys were maritime adjuncts. What we have especially neglected is the role of the Middle East and oil in the two world wars. Twice, the Germans and their allies pursued both. Important in the first conflict, petroleum became absolutely central between 1939 and 1945. 16 years before the guns of August of 1914, the Sultan of Turkey, Abdulhamid II, often called the Damned, received a Secret Service report about clandestine German exploration in what is now Iraq, but was then Ottoman Mesopotamia. The Kaiser's state visit to Constantinople, his grandiose profession of Muslim sympathies, his pursuit of a Turkish alliance, and his dream of a railroad from Berlin to Baghdad had a further, dark and seeping motivation. According to British historian Peter Hopkirk, quote, German geologists posing as archaeologists were at that very moment prospecting for oil around Mosul in northern Mesopotamia. Parenthetically, that's now Iraq. In fact, or so his spies informed him, they had already found it, for an intercepted German report spoke of the region offering, quote, even greater opportunities for profit than the rich oil fields of the Caucasus, unquote. Those fields had made Russia the Ottoman Empire's great rival, the world's top turn-of-the-century producer. The oil era was just beginning. After war broke out in 1914, the battlefield presence of automobiles, trucks, and aircraft, as well as the British Navy's reliance on oil rather than coal power, made petroleum an ever more important war resource. Luckily, large new oil fields in the United States and British development of Persia, together with Russian production, still accounting for 15% of world output, gave the Allies a leg up in dominating petroleum geography. After Germany, despite its advantages in coal, iron, and rail transport, failed to win a quick victory advancing into France in 1914, the war moved into the trenches. Motor transport and aircraft use mushroomed, and Germany's lack of oil became perilous. Through 1916, German war managers got some oil from overseas, but relied mainly on supplies from neutral Romania, Europe's second-largest producer. Although the Kaiser had completed his railroad from Berlin to Baghdad, commercial oil and gas development was not yet underway in Mesopotamia, despite conspicuous natural gas vents and oil seepage widely commented upon since the days of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Alas for Berlin, little came of the Turco-German, quote, Holy War, unquote, designed to stir 1914 and 15 Muslim revolution in the Russian Caucasus and against British authority in Persia and India. Note this, I'm going to repeat this sentence, but here we are seeing a direct predecessor of German geopolitics during the Second World War, in which the Grand Mufti recruited Muslim armies to, or Muslim fighting formations to fight on behalf of the Axis, the Third Reich in particular, in not only the Balkans, but the Middle East and the former Soviet Union. By the way, the Grand Mufti also mustered support among many of the Muslim populations of Asia for the Japanese documented domination of that part of the world as well. And in particular, the Mufti did broadcast in support of the Suk Ching massacres, the bloody massacres pursued by the Japanese against the Chinese, the wealthy Chinese minority in countries like Indonesia and Malaysia. That same geopolitical gambit is being employed today by Muslim Brotherhood elements in Asia. But note again, this use of a Turco-German holy war to stir up Muslim revolution in the Russian Caucasus and against the British in Persia and India. This is a direct predecessor of the World War II alliance between the Third Reich and the Muslim Brotherhood. Later, that alliance continued in an underground fashion with the Central Intelligence Agency also helping to bolster the Muslim Brotherhood, eventually installing them in a big way in Saudi Arabia. The CIA installing the Brotherhood, that is, in Saudi Arabia in a big way, combining the consummate oil wealth of Saudi Arabia with the Muslim Brotherhood's doctrine. That is the direct foundation of the project document discovered in Yusef Nana's apartment. Beginning returning once again to American Dynasty by Kevin Phillips. Alas for Berlin, little came of the Turco-German Holy War designed to stir 1914-15 Muslim Revolution of the Russian Caucasus and against British authority in Persia and India. Although the Sultan, as Caliph of Islam, proclaimed jihad, no serious rising took place. Turkish troops in the north did little more than mass near the Russian border. In the south, they threatened, but did not attack, the Anglo-Persian oil refinery in Abadan, just across the border in neutral Persia. The limited success came in 1915 when local tribesmen, agitated by German agents and the Turks, damaged the Anglo-Persian pipeline from the oil fields to Abadan, greatly reducing its flow for 5 months. Ironically, Winston Churchill, as First Lord of the Admiralty in 1914, had despaired of Britain's ability to defend the Persian oil fields and refinery. Quote, "There was little likelihood of any troops being available for this purpose. We shall have to buy our oil from somewhere else," unquote. Each side put a high priority on constricting the other side's oil supply. Germany responded to Britain's naval blockade and control of surface waters with a submarine campaign that decimated British shipping, not the least the oil tankers. In early 1917, adoption of unrestricted submarine warfare against Allied shipping doubled the tonnage sunk from a year earlier, reducing the Royal Navy's oil supply to a level that threatened paralysis. On the other side, when neutral Romania joined the Allies in late 1916, the Germans responded by capturing the Romanian oil fields around Ploiesti. But they were partly thwarted by a group of British destruction teams led by Colonel John Empire Jack Norton Griffiths. Given reluctant permission by the Romanian government, they wrecked derricks and pipelines, set the wells ablaze, and left such destruction that production could not be resumed until spring. Output by the Germans for all of 1917 was only one-third of that of 1916. After the war, General Ludendorff acknowledged the dire effects. After the Kaiser's Islamic Holy War had fizzled, Britain, France, and Russia turned their thoughts to a post-war division of the crumbling Ottoman Empire. As set out in the Sykes-Picot Agreement of 1916, Russia's post-war sphere of influence would include the Bosporus and part of Anatolia. France's would comprise Lebanon, Syria, and oil-rich Mosul. Britain would hold sway in Arabia, Palestine, and most of Mesopotamia, including Baghdad. Sir Maurice Hankey, Secretary of the War Cabinet, explained, quote, "Oil in the next war will occupy the place of coal in the present war. The only big supply we can get under British control is the Persian and Mesopotamian supply. Therefore, control over these supplies becomes a first-class British war aim," unquote. Revolution cost Russia its place at the post-war table, so Britain and France alone divided the Middle East pie. Besides guiding a tribal revolt in Arabia, British troops also prevailed in Palestine and Mesopotamia. From a base in Basra near the Persian border between 1915 and 1917, they drove up the valleys of the Tigris and Euphrates to seize Baghdad. Some of the same towns and battlefields, Shaiba, Al-Amara, Nasriya, would be visited in the Anglo-American invasion of Iraq in 2003. One other petroleum-driven campaign took place before the armistice. When revolution-racked Russia left the war in 1917, Germans and Turks took aim at the scarcely defended Russian oil fields in Baku, just north of Turkey and Persia. Before German diplomacy could work, a Turkish army put Baku under siege in the summer of 1918. However, a small British relief force arrived, delayed the oil center's capture, and then slipped away. Turkish troops did not take the city until September, too late for desperately needed oil to help Germany, which was forced to surrender on November 11th. Well, this basically is the German use of Muslim allies in World War I. Note that the Kaiser's profession of Muslim sympathies, unquote, when he visited Constantinople, when the Middle East in the post-World War I period came under British and French colonial occupation and with growing immigration by Jewish populations around the world to Palestine in order to set up a fledgling Israel, finally realized in the post-war period. That immigration, of course, greatly accelerated by the German oppression of Jews in Europe. When that took place, the combined German opposition to British, French, Jewish, and also the former Soviet Union's occupation of oil-producing areas in Eurasia engendered the formation of the Nazi policy of allying with the Muslim Brotherhood and with other Islamic fascist elements in the Middle East and elsewhere. And that is the policy that is reflected in the project. It's what ultimately helped to set the stage for the Third Reich's alliance with the Muslim Brotherhood. That then combined with a CIA alliance in the post-World War II period to help set up the present conditions for, well, it's called a war on terror. I really don't like that term at all. First of all, it's like a war on poverty. It's anthropomorphic. And also, it's basically what we're witnessing is a continuation of the struggle in von Clausewitzian terms of World War II. And we, ladies and gentlemen, are losing. Okay? Alrighty. Now, note again what we closed side one with. Not only a rather dramatic expression of Arab sympathies for Hitler, but also Hitler's view of allying with the Islamic peoples of the world as an essential element for the post-World War II realization of Nazi geopolitical ideals. The alliance with the Muslim Brotherhood and the Muslim Brotherhood's project-style doctrine are vehicles for realization of that goal. One of the factors, too, that figures in a big way here is petroleum and various corporate elements' alliance with the petroleum industry and through that with Saudi Arabia. Not only American oil companies and families like the Bushes, but elements like Alan Dulles and others factor into this same equation here. Another thing we should note, too, in terms of Muslim Brotherhood penetration of the West, when the CIA transferred the residua of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt to Saudi Arabia after Nasser kicked them out, the Muslim Brotherhood became allied with the tremendous oil wealth of Saudi Arabia. That not only wields tremendous political influence in the world, but through the reinvestment of their enormous profits, the Saudis and other Middle Eastern oil kingdoms wield a profound role in the large multinational corporations that dominate other industries as well. A consortium of Saudi princes owns a minority controlling interest in AOL Time Warner, the largest media firm in the world. In fact, Prince Al-Walid and other Saudi princes are the second largest stockholder in News Corp of Rupert Murdoch, as well as its Fox News subsidiary. Similar arrangements exist between other Middle Eastern oil kingdoms and giant corporations as well. That's a factor in this entire situation that doesn't get much discussion. Now, in our reading of the Le Temps, the translation of the Le Temps article, Swiss newspaper from October of 2005, we not only noted the primary position of the protocols of the Elders of Zion in the project document, but we also noted the Le Temps observation that the genesis of this theory, this pro-world Muslim-dominated theory, and using Muslim immigration into the West to help achieve this, was formulated by Saeed Ramadan. Saeed Ramadan not only moved to Geneva, as we looked at in For the Record 343, to ally with, among others, Francois Genoux, but as we looked at in, among other programs, 518, Saeed Ramadan also wielded a profound influence in Germany as well. We're going to review some information about the Muslim Brotherhood's history and their doctrine, and this should be reflected on against the background of the project. Reading text here from Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere, published in 2000 in softcover by Algora, talking about the Muslim Brotherhood moving to Munich, Germany, after they left Egypt and Geneva. "Why Munich? Why Germany?" I asked Rifat Saeed. Quote, "Because there one finds old complicities that go back to the late 1930s when the Muslim Brothers collaborated with the agents of Nazi Germany. By soaking up the savings of these Muslim workers, Youssef Nada, like Saeed Ramadan, took advantage of an extremely favorable context and used it as a springboard for the Muslim Brothers' economic activities. Note that in the project, economic activities were stressed very strongly. More about Yousef Nada's work for German intelligence in World War II. But Yousef Nada is even better known to the Egyptian intelligence services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the fraternity, parenthetically Muslim Brotherhood of the Muslim Brothers, in the 1940s. At that time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of the servants of the Third Reich. Talking more about the fascistic philosophy of the organization, the history of the fraternity makes the Brothers' concept of the Islamic State clear, a theocratic state of fascistic inspiration. Some of them were fellow travelers of the Nazis and are still today trying to resuscitate the old alliance of Islamism and the swastika. By the way, this text reading is still from Dollars for Terror. Mohammed Sayed al-Ashmawi continued, quote, "All my research always brings me back to the same point. At the beginning of this process of the perversion of Islam are the Muslim Brothers, an extreme right cult." An extreme right cult? The history of the Muslim Brothers is infused and fascinated by fascistic ideology. Sayed al-Ashmawi adds, quote, "Their doctrines, their total if not totalitarian way of life, takes as a starting point the same obsession with a perfect city on earth, in conformity with the celestial city whose organization and distribution of powers they can discern through the lens of their fantastical reading of the Quran." This, quote, fascistic affiliation, unquote, would crop up in the analyses of several of our interlocutors, in particular that of journalist Eric Rouleau, who is a specialist in the Middle East and a former French ambassador to Tunisia and Turkey. Still more of the Muslim Brotherhood's ideology. Lastly, the emergence and the rise to power of fascism, hostile to French and British colonialism, gave rise to many analogies with corporatist propaganda and the methods of mobilization of Mussolini's gangs. Skipping down still more. Taking Italy's choices under Mussolini for inspiration, the economic program set three priorities. The social policy foresaw a new law on labor founded on corporations. This economic program would more directly reveal its relationship to totalitarian ideologies a few years later with the works of Mohammad Ghazali. Mohammad Ghazali recommended, quote, an economic regimen similar to that which existed in Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. The moral code is also an important component in this program, which is intended to create the, quote, new Muslim man, unquote. The notion of the equality of the sexes is inherently negated by the concept of, quote, the supremacy of male social responsibilities, the, quote, natural, unquote, place of the woman is in the home. Again, all of that text I just read from Dollars for Terror by Lebevier, that is the basic doctrine of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that should be reflected on against the background of the project. By the way, the Muslim Brotherhood is enjoying large electoral successes in Egypt, yea, verily, as we speak. It was a recent article, but we have understanding the Muslim Brotherhood. Part of the deception is that they renounce violence. They only officially renounced violence against Muslims in other Muslim countries. Worldwide, however, they do not. Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad are offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. But by the way of understanding how extreme their social program is in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood has been very active lobbying to have sanitary napkin dispensers banned from women's rooms in public high schools. To give you an idea of just how extreme and almost medieval this organization is, this, quote, progressive, unquote, organization. By the way, being hailed by the American left and other so-called progressive elements as a reformist element, which is pretty interesting. If banning sanitary napkin dispensers from women's bathrooms in public buildings constitutes a progressive agenda, well, then I guess they're progressive. Some, however, might choose to dispute that. Now, more about the connections of Bank al-Taqwa. And again, it was Nazi intelligence agent Yousef Nada, who is the head of Bank al-Taqwa. It was in his apartment that that document, the project document, was found when Nada was arrested. And again, when one looks at Bank Altaqua, there's a whole lot more going on here than Muslims. Of course, we've looked at Francois Janoux's links to the milieu of Bank Altaqua. Janoux, a key Nazi spy before, during, and after World War II. And by way of understanding his importance, he is heir to the collected literary works and last will and testament of, check this out, Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. Of Janoux and Bank Altaqua, reviewing from For the Record 352, authorities believe, this is an article from the San Francisco Chronicle, Swiss probe anti-U.S. neo-Nazi by Jay Bushinsky. Authorities believe Janoux founded Bank Altaqua and allocated its resources to support international terrorists such as Vladimir Ilyich Ramirez, alias Carlo the Jackal, and Bin Laden. Now, we're going to review briefly from an interview that Ernest Bacas, a European expert on money laundering, gave with Bavarian State Radio on September 25th of 2001, right after the September 11th attacks. And by the way, the various fascist and Nazi connections to September 11th, including the many international neo-Nazi and fascist connections to Bank Altaqua, as well as connections of the Old Guard, can be found in, among other programs, For the Record 456. Now, Ernest Bacas here is talking about Francois Janoux and his links to Bin Laden, and another interesting reference here. According to Bacas' information, the trail leads to Switzerland, to the accounts of an organization that was founded by the late lawyer Francois Janoux and evidently still survives. Says Bacas, quote, "One of the grounds for accusation is that this Swiss attorney had the closest connections with the Bin Laden family, that he was an advisor to the family, one of its investment bankers. It's known for certain that he supported terrorism and was the estate executor for Hitler and part of the terror milieu." According to Bacas, the money trail for September 11th will go back to an organization founded by Francois Janoux. In an email exchange with Ernest Bacas, he made it clear that the institution he was referring to was the Bank Altaqua. Bacas also maintains that Francois Janoux, heir to the last will and testament and collective literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels, was an advisor to the Bin Laden family. Still more, one of the key people involved with SECO, the Saudi investment company that handles basically the European holding company that handles the fabulously wealthy Bin Laden family's investments. And the co-chairman of its board of directors is a fellow named Baudin Dunant of SECO. It's headed by Islam Bin Laden, and the board of directors is made up also almost exclusively of members of the family clan, except for a Swiss citizen, Baudin Dunant. This well-known lawyer from French-speaking Switzerland, who was on the boards of several dozen companies, came to public notice in 1983 when he agreed to represent the Swiss banker Francois Janoux, a controversial figure who had been a disciple of Hitler and sole heir of Goebbels' copyrights, before becoming one of the financiers of the FLN during the Algerian War. Baudin Dunant was a close personal friend of Janoux and also his attorney, his protege, and his personal friend. And in For the Record 498 and 499, we took a look at the links between SECO, Baudin Dunant, and Huffman Aviation, the quote, flight school, unquote, at which some of the hijackers, notably Mohammed Atta, a man with more connections than a switchboard, trained. Now, again, various programs the descriptions of various shows will flesh out your understanding of these dynamics. Also, read Cairo to Damascus, available for download for free on the Spitfire website. That'll give you a really good leg up on these dynamics as well. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program 537, The Project, the Muslim Brotherhood and Proxy War Around the World. This is being recorded on December 4th of 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.